All right, fabulous, wonderful. Okay, so we got to start getting ready for Purim, folks. Purim is 2 weeks away. 2 weeks from today, we will have already been drunk. So, got to get going here. We got things to do, things to accomplish. Okay, let's start with a basic, really basic idea. If I were to ask you to tell me the connection between, who'd I lose already? Oh my gosh, who left? I didn't even say anything. I lost somebody here. Shh, not even get started. The connection between the Hebrew month of Av and the month of Adar. The month of Av, in which we commemorate Tisha B'Av, the saddest day on the Jewish calendar, right? You have Tisha B'Av is in the month of Av, and then Adar, which is the month in which we celebrate Purim. Can someone please tell me the connection between those 2 months? Howard, is it something I said?
No, I don't know what happened.
Man, if you listen, all I said was hi, welcome, and then you were out of here. Man, tough crowd tonight. My question is, what is the month of Av, the Hebrew month of Av, and the month of Adar have anything to do with each other? What do you say, folks? Really? It's too early to be stumped.
Both start with A.
The
Olive.
Oh, there you go. Oh, that's the insight I was looking for. One can argue that they are so opposite each other. The month of Av is the month of sadness, and the month of Adar is full of joy. What's the connection?
Don't they say that Tisha B'Av is going to be like a Purim or whatever or something? It's
No.
going to be like Yom Kippur. I don't know. Tisha
No,
B'Av is going
it's
to be like the
no. What
happiest day
you're
of the week.
talking about, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about of where the sanctity of the holiday of Purim, according to many, is even higher than the sanctity of Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippurim can be read as Yom, a day, Ke, like Purim. Yom Kippur is like Purim. And there's a whole discussion about that, but it's you don't necessarily see Tisha B'Av related to Purim. But this is interesting. There's a halacha. There's a halacha, and actually brought down in the Code of Jewish Law, in the Shulchan Aruch. It says, Kishem Shemishenichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha, just like in the month of Av, we curtail. We minimize our simcha, our joy. Kach, so it is, mishenichnas Adar, when the month of Adar enters, marbim b'simcha. We increase our joy. Now, most of you knew that second half because everybody sings it. Mishenichnas Adar, marbim, marbim, marbim b'simcha. When the month of Adar begins, we increase our joy. But the context of where that is, that's the second half of a sentence. The first half reads, when the month of Av begins, we cut back, we curtail our joy. That's one of the reasons why during the 3 week period from Shavasa B'Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz through Tisha B'Av is the saddest day, we curtail our joy. We don't have weddings. Many people are very particular not to listen to music. They don't take haircuts. It's almost a period of mourning, MOURNING. So the two are linked in contrarian kinds of ways. Whereas the month of Av, we minimize the joy, the simcha. In Adar, we increase it. That's brought down actually in Halacha. And the commentaries want to know what is it? I mean, okay, it's true. If you want to tell me two facts, the fact is that the month of Av is a period of mourning, and therefore one should curtail their joy. That's one fact. And there's another fact that the month of Adar is a very joyous month, and therefore we should increase. But I would not necessarily draw a connection between the month of Av and the month of Adar. It just coincides. This one you minimize, and this one you increase. But that's not what's brought down in Halacha. In Halacha, it says, Kishem, just as we minimize the joy in the month of Av, so too should we increase our joy in the month of Adar, as if to say that the two are linked together. And it's hard to understand what exactly that link is. Oh, you hear the question? Let's examine this. It gets even further. Listen to another halacha. The halacha is we do many things, and most of us are familiar with some of it. We minimize our joy when we have happy occasions. Why? Because we don't want to forget the fact that the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, has been destroyed and has yet to be rebuilt. What's the classic example of where we put aside and minimize our joy for a moment to recognize this? What's the classic example?
Passover, taking drops of wine out of the wine glass before you
That's
drink.
not necessarily for the temple. That's for the
No.
destruction of the Egyptians.
At
We
a
don't
wedding when
want
we
to
break the
laugh and so to
glass.
say, what?
At a wedding when we break the glass.
Excellent. At the wedding, that's the classic example. It's the height of our joy. Everybody's so happy for the occasion. And before the chuppah is over, we take a moment and we say, Yemesh kachech Yerushalayim, if I forget you, Yerushalayim, and we break the glass. As a reminder, that's the classic example. It's brought down in halacha that the truth is that at every meal, even a festive meal, there should be some demarcation of the fact that Yerushalayim has and the Beit HaMikdash has not been rebuilt. For example, it's brought down that when we make a meal, as I just said, some people leave a place empty, an empty plate, an empty chair, as if to say our joy is not complete, there's something missing. I never fully understood it until, unfortunately, October 7th. And we're now, it's a wonderful way to remember, even though it's been so long, is that people still set an empty table for the hostages that are missing. It's a beautiful idea. And there are people who will sit at their Shabbos table and they'll have one place empty. And they'll ask why. It's because I don't want to forget that we're missing our hostages. If this is true in one particular incident here in 2023, on October the 7th, that we don't want to forget. It's been a few months. How much more so as Jews, we need to always remember the fact that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. Our temple has yet to be rebuilt. So it's brought down that at a meal, even a festive meal, one should leave a place or at least something should be missing as a recognition of it. However, this halacha, while it may apply to a Shabbos meal, a regular Yom Tov meal, even a bris milah, which is a very festive meal, it's brought down that one is not required to do that for one meal in particular. One meal, you do not have to have any recognition of the loss of the Beit HaMikdash. And what meal is that? The meal you have on Purim.
Purim Suda.
Purim Suda. Why? Of all things, why that in particular, don't you have to remember the mourning and the loss of the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim? Why? Why specifically this meal of Purim? These are my two opening questions. I'm pretty sure that none of you have thought more than 5 seconds about what I've just asked. So I'm in good standing because truth is, till I read the piece, I didn't think about it either. But once I read this, my mind has been changed. My mind has been blown open with a great, unbelievable concept that I am going to share with you right now. What if I told you, let's put ourselves in the mindset of the Jews during the time of the Purim story? Just put ourselves in their position for a moment. We're living our lives, we're living scattered amongst the kingdom in Persia. And Haman rises to the high ranks, and he convinces Ahasuerus, the king, to promulgate an edict to wipe out the Jews. Now, again, try to put yourself in this position. It would be horrifying. We would feel tremendous anxiety, tremendous, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And you fast forward through the whole story and this miraculous saving, and we're festive now. It's a tremendous redemption. God has saved us from this definite difficulty. this challenge of potential annihilation of the Jewish people. How do we celebrate? To this day, how do we celebrate? If you ask any Jew, secular, religious, what's the celebration of Purim? They're all going to say
Drinking.
drinking wine, till the point, so much so that even in halacha, it talks about you drink ad lo yada, to a point of where you can't even tell the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Arur Haman. Blessed is Mordechai and cursed is Haman. You're so inebriated, you can't
You know
tell the
which.
difference anymore. That's pretty darn drunk. Really? Why would our sages go ahead and codify? It's one thing. Listen, you didn't hear this from me, right? But there seems to be a custom out there that people love to drink on Simchas Torah. You ever see that? In some shuls, they drink like there's no tomorrow. To the best of my knowledge, there is absolutely no source for that custom at all. Zero. None. Okay. People want to get into a festive mood. They want to, okay, you can start to rationalize. Maybe that's where it came from. But you will not find a source in halacha that tells us that on Simchas Torah, the mitzvah to drink. Yet on Purim, it tells us black on white, yes, go ahead. Doesn't say have a l'chaim. It doesn't say have a drink. It says drink till you can't tell the difference between Mordechai and Haman. Really? This is how our sages mandated to celebrate one of the greatest victories of the saving of the Jewish people, that we get stone drunk?
Rabbi, can I ask a quick question in here?
Please, this is
Because
bothersome.
you mentioned drinking wine, and then so you can't tell the difference between Mordechai and Haman. Is it only wine that you're supposed to drink? Is there some kind of guidance, or can you drink anything?
You mean as opposed to whiskey?
Yeah.
So the truth is, it does talk about it from wine. It does talk about wine. I'm not going to say that it's to the exclusion of whiskey, but there is a much deeper meaning when it's associated with wine. For example, wine, let's see, what's the easiest way to do this? Wine has the numerical value of 70. Yud is 10, another yud is another 10, and nun is 50. That's 70. 10, 10, and 50 is 70. Okay? The same
Okay.
numerical value as sod. Sod means secrets. Samach vav dalet. It's the same numerical value of 70. The Gemara says, Nichnas yayin, when wine enters, yatsa sod, out come secrets. In English, we say, loose lips sink ships. Right? Because what comes out wine, you lose your filter, you lose your ability to hold back, and you just say stuff. But on a much deeper level, on a spiritual level, when wine enters a person, it allows them to not give out secrets, but to understand secrets. You take away a certain filter that is naturally there, and you can see things differently. Our sages want us to partake of wine because the whole essence of the Purim story is to see the hidden miracle and not see it on a surface level. If you read the Megillah and you don't have any frame of reference, it sounds like an amazing story of coincidences. One coincidence after another. The fact that Achashverosh is even king is a coincidence. The fact that he has a party for everybody and he gets Vashti to come in and she doesn't want to come and he has her killed. And a coincidence, he goes ahead and he has a beauty pageant. And coincidentally, the one person who doesn't want to win wins the pageant. And coincidentally, the one person who doesn't say what nation they're from is the one he picks. Right? One after another. And Mordechai coincidentally overhears an assassination plot. And you read the whole story, and it could be an unbelievable story of coincidences. But from a Torah perspective, when we analyze it, we see there's so much more behind the scenes. The idea of pulling back the curtain, taking a look at behind the veil, that's the idea that when one takes in wine, you remove that barrier and all that inhibition that is normally held in check behind closed door is open. The idea of looking behind the curtain, seeing the deeper meaning and understanding the secrets behind it, that's the essence of Purim. That's why they suggest wine. Could a person reach that level with whiskey? Probably, probably. But wine has that concept of 70, yud yud nun, equaling sod, secret. That's one answer that they propose.
Thank you.
Okay. But back to our situation here. Why would our sages tell us the way to celebrate is to drink till you can't tell the difference anymore? One answer that's proposed that I was very surprised about, and that is at the time of Purim, they mandated the drinking of it. Why? Because they were so depressed. They were so depressed. How did we get to this story of Purim? Why were we in Persia in the first place? How did we get to Persia?
With the exile?
Yes, because 70 years earlier was the destruction of the first temple. And we were exiled into Babylonia and then ultimately ended up in Persia. And the Jews were, in Yiddish, they were tzebrachen a mention. They were brokenhearted. They were depressed. And in order to forget their woes, in order to forget it, the idea of Purim happened in front of their eyes. Remember, these are people that probably experienced, or at least one generation from when the destruction of the first temple. And the glory of Yerushalayim, the glory of the temple, was still in their fresh, recent memory. And therefore, it was hard for them to rejoice. How can we rejoice? We're still in exile. Therefore, they made a conscious decision. Let's drink and forget about our woes. Interesting idea. I'm not suggesting that that's the full reason, but it struck me as very interesting. And I'll tell you why. Because if you understand that concept, we can start to unravel this. If I told you that the whole point of celebrating Purim is to put aside and forget about the destruction of the temple, then I begin to understand the connection between the month of Av and the month of Adar. They have to work in diametrically opposite modalities. Whereas the month of Av, where we are commemorating the loss of Yerushalayim, the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, comes the month of Adar, Purim. No, I'm not focusing on the destruction. I'm not focusing on the loss, just the opposite. I'm going to celebrate, and I'm going to put it in the opposite perspective. Meaning, the same way that I need to focus on the loss in the month of Av, I specifically don't focus on the loss in the month of Adar. That's what's being suggested here. The true joy and the happiness of Purim is, number one, putting aside the loss of temple number one. But if you know your history, you know that immediately following the story of Purim, what happens? Immediately following, after Ahasuerus comes out with the second decree of where the Jews have the right to defend themselves and to take vengeance against their enemy, Haman and his sons are all hanged. What happens next?
Is that when we're freed? Ezra frees us to go back to build the temple.
That's exactly correct. Immediately following the story of Purim, a group of Jews travel up from Persia, go back up to Jerusalem, and they start the construction, or restart. I should say restart. The construction of the second temple. So in a way, the celebration of Purim is not only putting away and putting aside the loss and destruction of temple one, but rather it's also the beginning of the celebration of the construction of temple two. Everything about the story of Purim is the antithesis of focusing on loss, of the mourning period, but just the opposite. It's the celebratory aspect of what we now will have again. Very much so. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but if you read in the story, in the book of Yechezkel, in the book of Ezekiel, if you want to look it up, it's all about, it's allusions to the construction of the second temple. It talks about it there. And it actually started, the inauguration began on the 3rd of Adar, and they pushed it and pushed it and pushed it until the 23rd of Adar, 21 days, 21 days. They pushed it off. Why? Because they wanted to have the focus over the holiday of Purim. They wanted to make the connection between the construction of Temple 2 and ultimately even the construction, God willing, of Temple 3 all be associated in the month of Adar. Okay, but let's see if we can understand why. Let's see if we can understand it. Now that we've at least made the connection, let's try to understand this. Okay. If I'm going to ask you, you ready, Rick? I'm going to fast forward. Mashiach is here, and now we're going to move into the next phase of world history. Tell me, what holidays are we going to still celebrate in, forget Mashiach, let's talk about in the world to come, in the future. What holidays are we going to celebrate Shavuos?
Just Purim.
Just Purim. Wow, that was quick. You got rid of that in a heartbeat. Is he worrying about cleaning for Pesach already? Man, got rid of that one so fast.
You can clear out your Pesach deck of dishes already.
So we would not be celebrating Pesach in the world to come?
It would seem, according to Rick Hoffman, and you may ask him for a source on it, that all the festivals will become, I'll use the word abolished, I don't really mean it, but abolished, except for the holiday of Purim. Is that what you're saying, Rick?
Yes.
Okay, so the source for that, you're not wrong, the source for that is actually the Midrash in Mishle, in the book of Proverbs. The Midrash actually says that. Kol ha-moadim yiyu b'teilim, all festivals will become, and I'll use the word abolished, many don't take it literally, v'imei ha-purim, but the days of Purim, lo yiyu niftalin la'olam, will never become abolished. They will be around forever. Now, Rick says it as a matter of fact, and I've given him the source, but Steve Nichol is having a conniption fit. He's like, what are you talking about? Purim, it's not even in the Torah, man. We're talking about the three pilgrimage festivals, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot. You've heard me drone on and on for years about the importance of these holidays and how it's so we have to celebrate and learn lessons from. And you're telling me some minor rabbinic festival that we get drunk on, that's going to be the one that's going to be everlasting? Really? Got to have some deeper explanation to that. But wait, I have one other question. Of all the miraculous salvations that the Jewish people have experienced over the years, starting from as early as the Egyptians had us enslaved, and we were miraculously saved. God took us out with 10 plagues, crossed the sea, split it for us. Boom. The Egyptians drowned. Okay, move on. Next, and you have the attack of Amalek. And then you have the conquest of Israel. And you have, and story after story with Hanukkah. And so many stories. Purim seems to be the only story that has a wacky focal point of people being hanged. The Megillah is obsessed with this concept. What is up with that? Everything involves hanging. Haman gets in his head, we're going to get Mordechai, and I'm going to snitch on him, and I'm that stinking Jew, and I'm going to get rid of him. And you know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to build gallows 50, 100 feet in the air, and I'm going to show everyone. Really? Okay, that's what you got under your head. Okay. Fast forward. Ahasuerus can't sleep. Haman wants to get this idea. Fine. I have the whole party, a private party with Esther and Haman and Ahasuerus. And finally she says, it's Haman, he's the evil one. He's the one who makes this terrible decree against my people. And all of a sudden, the minister there named Charvona, hey, king, you know that gallows that he wanted for Mordechai? Let's hang him. Oh, yeah, great idea. And then Esther says, oh, by the way, I also want his 10 sons hanged. Great, let's hang them. What's up with hanging? That was not the normal way of how we got rid of people back then. It's not. Guillotine, maybe, chop their head off, beheading. I mean, there's ways we did it. Hanging, it's unheard of. What is up with hanging? This is the only story until the Nuremberg trials, but we're not going to go there today. But keep that in mind. There is a definite connection between the 10 Nazis who were hanged at the Nuremberg trial, mirroring exactly the 10 that were killed in the story of Purim, but save that for another time. Okay. If we have time, maybe we'll talk about it. But we all have to at least acknowledge hanging is the MO of the story of the Megillah. And it's strange. There's no other story like this anywhere. What's up with that? Okay. Here's another piece of information, and I promise I'll do my best. We'll tie it all together. Okay? But I got to just throw stuff at you. Every single month on the Jewish calendar has an association with a certain body part and is also a constellation and other and letters, whatever. There's in Kabbalah, they talk about each month. There's 12 months. There's 12 months. Why are there 12 months? Howard remembers. We talked about this. I'm sure Howard remembers because he's like a sponge. He don't let me forget nothing. The 12 months, why 12? Because there are exactly 12 possible permutations of God's name. The Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey. For those who hate math, that used to be known as 4 factorial, right? 4 times 3 times 2 times 1, except that's 24. Good try, Rabbi. Except there's two letters that are the same, Yud and Hey, a Vav and Hey. So you don't have 4 different letters, 4 different numbers. So it's really only 4 times 3 times 1. So it's 12. There are only 12 possible permutations of switching around the letters of God's name. Each combination of those names corresponds to a certain constellation of stars that a certain energy comes to the world. So, for example, in the month of Av, which we've already described as a sad month, it's a month of inauspicious occasions. There, the way God's name is spelled, that permutation, has it that the energy is a negative flow. As opposed to the month of Adar, or the month of Nisan, which are very happy months, there, God's name, that formula, that combination, is one that expresses and manifests in positive energy. Okay. What is the constellation? What is the zodiac sign for the month of Adar? Whose birthday is this month? Anybody
A
have a
fish.
birthday this month?
It's a
What?
fish.
Yeah, it's fish. It's Pisces. Man, you guys are seriously. You don't even know your horoscope. Like, come on, what kind of Jew are you? Seriously, you don't check your horoscopes? Good. It's a waste of time. But you have to know this stuff, man. You got to know this concept. So Rick is right. So Pisces, right? That's the fish, right? So why is Adar and what is so unique about fish? Listen to this amazing thing. I'll read you a Midrash. The Midrash writes as follows on the Megillah. Kisha Amar Haman Harasha La'abed Es Yisrael. When Haman had in his head, he came up with the plot and the plan to destroy and annihilate the Jewish people. Amar, he said to himself, Heichani sholeit bahem, how am I going to overpower them? I need some kind of sign. I need some kind of indication. Where are they vulnerable? Hareini mapil gorolos. I'm going to cast lots. I'm going to throw the dice, and I'm going to keep coming up. By the way, what's the most you can get on dice? Two pair, right? Yeah, is 12. That's how you do it, folks. That's it. 1 through 12. Those are your numbers, because those represent the 12 possibilities. You ever wonder, like, why they play games? It's always two dice. Why not three? Till Dungeons and Dragons came along, everybody used two dice. That's it. That's the way we played life, right? But now, okay, because it's 1 through 12. So Haman says he's going to go ahead. He fast forward. Then he went to the months. Hischil b'chodesh Nisan. He started, okay, how about the month of Nisan for the Jewish people? He says, no, can't be. No, they have this, they got that. No, until finally, Balo Mazel Dagim. He came to the month of Adar and he saw that the sign, the zodiac sign, was fish. Lo nimtza lo zechus. He says, ah, the Jewish people have no merits in that month. They're like fish. Ah, I got them now. V'samach miyad. He was so happy. He rejoiced. The month of Adar, that's the one. Adar ein lo zechus. Adar has no merits. Umazolo ein lo zechus, and its mazel has no merits. This is the month. Kishem shehadogim bolim, just like fish gets swallowed up by other fish. Kach ani bolea osan, I'm going to swallow up them. The month of Adar for the Jews is associated with fish, and just as fish gets swallowed up, that's an indication that the Jews are going to get swallowed up, and I am going to swallow them up. What are we supposed to make of that? Because fish gets swallowed up? Yeah, but the fish that swallowed the other fish is a bigger fish. I was like, what does that mean? He was so excited because just like fish gets swallowed up, I'm going to swallow up the Jewish people. It's hard to understand what the Medrash is saying until we learn one simple concept. Let me tell you a story. The story happened many years ago. It's in the Torah, actually. When Yosef has been away from his family because he was sold. You remember that story? Right? And finally, he was thrown in prison. He comes out, and now he's the viceroy, and the brothers come down because there was a famine, yada, yada, yada. Fine. He sees Binyamin. And finally, after all these years, Yosef and Binyamin hug each other. And the Torah goes out of the way to tell us, Vayipol al tzavorei Binyamin achiv, that Yosef fell upon the neck of his brother, Binyamin, and he cried, Ubinyamin bacha al tzavorav, and Benjamin cried on his shoulder, on his neck, sorry, on his neck. The Torah emphasizes that Yosef cried on Benjamin's neck and Benjamin cried on Joseph's neck. It was a Freudian slip, but we don't normally talk about people crying on a neck. We talk about crying on someone's shoulder, right? Don't say crying on someone's neck. The Torah says, Al Tzavarav, on his neck. And in fact, when it says that Binyamin cried on his neck, on Joseph, he says it in the plural. It's like, on Benjamin, plural, on Benjamin's necks. Like, what's up with necks? Does anybody, we spoke about this years ago. Anybody remember what the connection is about a neck and the Beit HaMikdash?
Ooh. No, I seem to vaguely remember something about Joseph was crying on Benjamin's neck because the Beis HaMikdash is in the Benjamin's land, territory portion. And their
Excellent.
Portion, and they were going to be, he foresaw the destruction of the temple.
Bullseye. Rashi brings down that right. idea, and that is Benjamin cried on Joseph's neck because the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the mobile transport ended up in Joseph's portion in Israel. And it was ultimately destroyed. And Benjamin, in his portion, both the temples were there and were also destroyed. Our sages point out that they each foresaw the loss of the temple slash tabernacle in Benjamin and Joseph's portions, and that's what they were crying about. All of the commentaries throw their hands up and say, what? They're crying because they haven't seen each other in decades. Why can't you just leave the verse to mean the simple understanding? He saw him and he cried. Well, what's so difficult that you have to go in and read into it that it means the temple and he was destroyed? They answer all the same answer. And that is the Torah changes the normal terminology. You don't cry on someone's neck. You cry on their shoulder. What is up with a neck? They all explain. The neck is the connector between your head and your body. The neck acts as a bridge. The point of your neck is the joining of two parts. Your brain is in your head. Your thoughts, your spiritual side, the fact that you can contemplate God is in your head. From your neck down, from your shoulders down, you'll forgive me, gentlemen, but it's no different than an animal. We have it in common. We have a torso. We have reproductive organs. We have arms. We have legs. Whoop-de-doo. If you want to think about it, is the spiritual side of mankind is up here. The physical side of mankind is down here. And what connects the spiritual and the physical is your neck. The neck represents the joining, the bridge of the spiritual and the physical. In fact, to take it even further, that's the reason why your voice is in your neck. Because being able to speak, to articulate an idea, a thought that's in your head, how can I convey that to someone else? I mean, if you think about it, it's astounding. Our ability to communicate ideas, thoughts, lofty concepts, which are in our head, I'm able to articulate with speech that you can hear and incorporate and internalize into your own head. It's an amazing thing. Speech is the medium by which God blessed mankind with that he didn't give to any other creature. Our high-level intellectual communication. Yes, animals have forms of communication, but they cannot express the ideas. There's no way that a buffalo is going to be sharing a Dvar Torah like I'm sharing with you tonight. And there is no way that any dolphin or gorilla is going to understand half of what I'm saying as much as you guys. That was a compliment. Okay? They just don't have the speech is the medium by which we can do it. Why is that? Because what it does is it takes a spiritual, intangible idea that's in your brain and it brings it out into the physical world with sound waves that someone else can hear and incorporate. So the place where the connecting of spiritual and physical is your neck. That's why your voice is in your neck. So the one place on earth that was the prototype, the epitome of connecting spirituality and physicality was the Beit HaMikdash. That was a physical building that brought down God's presence here on earth. That's representative of a neck. It's the bridge. And therefore, our sages were bothered when it said that Joseph and Benjamin cried on each other's necks. They understood on a deeper level they were crying about a neck. The neck that was the most prototypical of connecting the spiritual and physical worlds was the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, when it says they cried about their necks, they were crying about the loss of the ultimate bridge of spiritual and physical, meaning the Beit HaMikdash. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Once we get that, so the whole concept of the destruction of the temple means to do away with the neck. If I go ahead and I get rid of the neck, I destroy the joining of the spiritual and the physical. That's symbolic. right? Therefore, the destruction of the temple, the destruction of the tabernacle is specifically associated with the neck. Haman realizes, or he thinks, he has come across the ultimate sign that he will be successful in destroying the Jewish people. Because you know what the zodiac sign for the month of Adar is? The fish. Guess what fish are missing? What do fish not have that every other creature does? A neck. A fish has no neck. Interesting. Haman sees that symbol as, this is the month where the Jewish people are going to ability to lose their neck. They're going to lose because this is the month of fish. But wait, there's one other animal that also doesn't really have a neck. And don't say giraffe. Dude, do not say giraffe.
How about a snake?
Go ahead. Snake is a good one. There's one other. It's the pig. Yeah, I know. It looks like it. But it's brought down that the chazir, the pig, also does not have a neck, technically. Its body goes right up against the head. Now, why is that significant? Who in history is compared to the pig? Which person? You know this. If you had to pick a biblical character that would be symbolic associated with the pig, you would pick? Come on, be bold. Take a chance. Wimps. Come on. Take a
Paro?
Shot. Who?
Pharaoh? Paro?
Good guess. He's associated with the snake, by the way. That's a good one.
Okay. Back to snakes.
Oh, yeah. But who would be associated with the chazir, with the pig? Who's the one that was very similar? What? Why is the pig not kosher? Because the Torah says it only has one of two signs, right? For an animal to be a land animal to be kosher, it has to have both. Split hooves, and chew its cud. The pig is the one creature, the only one on earth that has one of that, but not the other, and it has split hooves, but does not chew its cud. It is not a ruminant. It only has one stomach, but it has split hooves, and it sticks its hooves out and says, look, look at me. I look kosher. But internally, it's not. Who was so like that?
Esav.
Ding, 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 ding. Esav. Esav presented himself to his father as this most righteous individual. He would come and ask Isaac all these questions about how do I do this right and how do I do that right. And he performed kibbutz of aim, respect for his father. But internally, he was a murderer. He was a rapist. He was a solidly bad dude. He was like the pig who presents himself. Look, 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 look. But he's not. He's the only other one that doesn't have a neck. So Haman, by the way, Haman comes from what nation?
Amalek.
Amalek. Amalek is what relationship to Esav?
His offspring.
Yeah, he's an offspring, a very specific one, very close one. The original dude named Amalek was Esav's grandson. Yeah, Esav's grandson is the fellow who the nation of Amalek is named by. That's the first Amalek. So the line of Haman and all of Amalek is direct descendants and offspring from Esav. Esav is the chazir. Esav is the pig. Has no neck. Because in Esav's world, there is no connection between the spiritual and physical. There is no bridge. You live in the physical. Don't tell me about joining This part is spiritual and elevate. Baloney, farfignugin. It's all about the physicality. There's no neck. Comes along Haman and he sees that the month of Adar is also a creature without a neck. It's fish. And he's all excited. And just like fish gets swallowed up, I'm going to swallow them up. However, he makes a tragic mistake. Ha He makes a tragic mistake. And that is, fish is a very good sign for us. Fish is an excellent sign for us. Because even though I told you that the ultimate joining of physicality and spirituality, represented by the neck, is represented by the Beit HaMikdash, the joining of these two worlds, so to say, let's be honest, that's not the ultimate. The ultimate was really for us not to have a Beit HaMikdash at all. Where would God's presence dwell if we didn't have the building and we didn't serve the golden calf? Let's put it in perspective. We came out of Egypt. We traveled. We came to Mount Sinai. God speaks to the entire Jewish nation. He gives us the Torah. We are literally on cloud 9. Maybe even 10. And we were supposed to move forward from there, but we messed up and we sinned with the golden calf. And in order to rectify it, God said, okay, I'll give you a building in which my presence can dwell. But that's not what the ultimate was. What was the ultimate? Where was God's presence supposed to dwell?
Among us.
What does that mean? What do you say, among us? My neighbor, your neighbor?
Inside of us.
Yes, within us. There really should be no Beit HaMikdash. That's the honest truth. It should be a direct relationship. Us, God, nothing in between. No bridge. It's literally me and God. You and God, one and the same. That's really the ultimate. Without a neck. The fish doesn't represent the negative aspect that Haman thought. Just like the pig has no neck and therefore it's all about crushing and all about the physicality. I can take them down. He misunderstood. The fish represents the ability to be without a neck because we would be directly linked to Hashem. In fact, the verse when Hashem tells us to build the Beit HaMikdash, how does he say it? He says, Va'asu li mikdash, make for me a sanctuary, v'shochanti bisocham, and I will dwell, translate the word, bisocham, in them. Not amongst them. Bisocham, betoch means in. It's supposed to be without any bridge. It's literally overlapping from one to the other, as if they were adjoining properties. Nothing to bridge over. No space, no gap in between. Haman thinks that he has the Jewish people against the wall, because he sees the month of Adar, and he sees it's a fish, and he thinks just like his nation comes from the pig without a neck, and therefore it all represents the physicality and impurity, so too this is my chance for the Jewish people this month. And he totally misunderstands that it's just the opposite. This is the month, so to say, I can put aside the Beit HaMikdash, and I can say I have a direct relationship with Hashem. That's my ultimate connection. That's why Haman comes up with the craziest idea in the world. How's he going to get rid of Mordechai? How does he want to do it? What's the capital punishment he wishes to inflict on Mordechai?
Hang him.
Why hanging? Where do you hang somebody?
By the neck.
By the neck. You're trying to sever the neck. It's all about Haman saying again, no connection, no bridge. Nothing to connect spiritual and physical. Haman wants to get rid of all of it, specifically at the neck. This would explain now more with the question we started with. What is up with the connection between the month of Av and the month of Adar. The month of Av is all about the destruction of the temple, and Adar is all about joy and celebration. What do the two have to do with each other? Now it's much easier to understand. And that is, in the month of Av, I'm mourning the fact that I don't have a bridge. I don't have that ultimate prototype that explained the idea of joining physical and spiritual. I mourn that. I feel its loss. But in the month of Adar, I say, yeah, well, I feel bad that I don't have it. I know that we can have something even better without a neck. It's called a direct relationship. That's the month of Adar, the celebration of where I can go ahead and get rid of all the barriers. No barriers whatsoever. It's just me and Hashem. That's all there is. If I were to, when I put this this talk, this discussion up online, the name of this class is Haman the Neckless Horseman. Because in Haman's mind, it's all about no necks. We look at it and say, yeah, because ultimately, I want to be in the relationship without the neck, without the Beit HaMikdash. I want to have the relationship where God's presence dwells literally within us, without a Beit HaMikdash. Okay, I'll take it when I can have it. But I mourn the loss that I don't even have that. But we should never fool ourselves in thinking that's the ultimate. The ultimate is with no bridge, no gap, no, it's just direct connection. The month of Adar is all about that direct connection. In fact, I'll finish with this. I mentioned that every month is associated with different letters, different body parts. So the month of Adar is associated with the nose. The nose. Yeah, Steve is like, what? Oh my God. Did I wake up and this is like a nightmare? What am I? This is, I'm hallucinating. He's talking gibberish. What does the nose have anything to do with this conversation?
The nose knows.
Yes, the nose knows. Correct. If you go back to the story of the Garden of Eden, which I love, that's always my favorite to go back to. When they sinned, when Adam and Eve partook of that tree, the Torah tells us in vivid detail everything about that garden. Amazing. It's a garden. And she sees the fruit that it's pleasant to look at. And she reaches for it. And she takes it. And she gives it to her husband. And she, first thing that comes to your mind, Mark. First thing, I don't care, either Mark. First thing that comes to your mind when I say the word garden. What comes to your mind? Quick.
I think a fragrance or...
Fragrance. It smells great, right? Mark, Appy, there's no mention of smell in the entire story of the Garden of Eden. It doesn't... I would have expected it to say, she saw that it looked good. She saw that it smelled great. She took it. She ate back. All five senses I would have expected. It says nothing about fragrance in that garden. Strange. It's the first thing I would have expected. So the Arizal tells us that the sense of smell was not harmed by the sin. When they ate from that tree, the other four senses were downgraded. And they took on a more physical aspect about themselves. But not the sense of smell. Your olfactory organ works best. I'll prove it to you. When you have this delicious, fresh apple pie sitting in front of you, all five senses have the ability to enjoy and have pleasure from it. But if I take it out of the room, only one of your senses still has pleasure. You can't physically take it, right? So touch, taste, hear, you don't hear it anymore, and you can't see it anymore. But can you still smell it? Yes, you can. Because the sense of fragrance, the sense of smell has a longer lasting because it retained a higher spiritual component. because it didn't get flawed by the sin. There was no smell associated with that sin. Says the Arizal, it's no mention of it by the sin of the tree. It retained a certain high level. What's fascinating is that the month of Adar is associated with the nose, because on a spiritual level, the month of Adar allows us to connect in a way that the other months don't let us connect. It's direct. No buffers, no bridges, no gaps. It's direct. Not only that, but the two heroes of the story are all associated with fragrance. What's Esther's other name?
Hadassah?
Hadassah. Hadassim, we know Hadassim is the myrtle. That's the most fragrant of the four, right? Remember, we take the four species on Sukkot. You have the esrog, which has great fragrance, but so do Hadassim, right? They use myrtle. I know people for Saturday night when they make Havdalah and they're using spices, they'll use the leaves that they took off their Hadassim last Sukkot. They take them off after the holiday, put them in a little jar, and every Saturday night they make a bracha on it. That's their spices because it's still fragrant. So Esther is associated with fragrance, Hadassah, and Mordechai is actually an Aramaic name, come from the word mar dirar, which is another kind of fragrance used in one of the incense offerings. Mordechai, Mardechi, Mordechai. So the heroes of the story are also associated with smell. It's not a coincidence, because on the highest spiritual level, in the month that provides us the opportunity of the highest spiritual connection without a neck, like fish, is not a coincidence. And that's why the same way that we do associate the mourning and the loss of the Beit HaMikdash in the month of Av, I specifically don't mourn. I specifically celebrate in the month of Adar, because I have that direct connection. That, my friends, is the deeper meaning behind it. And that's why the meal of Purim, you don't have to have a remembrance of the loss, and you don't have to leave a plate open, and you don't have to. Why? Because it's all about not having the Beit HaMikdash, but having a direct connection. This is out there, folks. I'm telling you, you can pay anybody all the amounts of money you want. You're not going to hear this from anybody else. This is just us. Nobody else gets this stuff. I'm telling you. Go ahead, fire away. I'm Fred, you got to have at least three questions. No way. It's
gotta hey, I got a question.
Okay, go ahead, Rick.
So for us to be in that position where Purim is the only holiday, first we have to have the Mashiach come. Then we got to build the base Mikdash again. And then we'll have Purim as the only holiday. But you're saying, but the Beit Mikdash is the connection. It's the neck. And you're saying we're not going to have the neck. We don't need the neck. But the whole plan is to have the neck through the Beit Mikdash first.
Ultimately, we may not. There may be. The Beit HaMikdash is a means for us to connect. There's no question about that. And I'm not suggesting that we should just bypass that system. But if you're asking me, in the ultimate sense, the Beit HaMikdash is not the nth. It's not the ultimate. It may be close, but it's not the ultimate. The ultimate is direct. But we need a Beit HaMikdash. We do.
Yeah.
We can't go from 0 to 60 without it.
Mm-hmm. I think it connects people. I mean, in today's world, it connects people.
Correct. It has that function. Even going up to the Beit HaMikdash, part of the reason is it's called Ola Regel. We go up on the festival, but it also implies that we all came together as one. I'm convinced that, God willing, I'll have my own place in Israel one day. I already am in my head. I don't know where I'm really going to live, but there's a small little house somewhere in the Silwan Valley that I already picked out. It's mine. Ahmed doesn't know, but it's mine. I already picked it out. Why do I want that house? It's nothing special. Trust me. Why? Because it's right on the path as people will walk from Jerusalem up to the Beit HaMikdash. They're going to stop at Tachman's house for a l'chaim to get a little something on the way up. And it's going to be a cousin's corner. That's what I want. So part of being Ola Regel, going up in the pilgrimage fashion, is to come as a people, as a group. Beis HaMikdash will serve that function 100%. 100%. Exactly like Mark is saying. But don't forget, guys, you're going to stop at my house on the way. Just tell him.
Very
That's
smart.
Going to be my special Yom Tov house. In the Silwan Valley. Questions, thoughts? What do you think, guys?
Great topic.
Yeah?
Enjoyed
any questions?
It. Just, I got a sidebar question. I apologize. Please. I kind of got on the call late because I was working. I just wanted to ask you in general about your trip to Israel, how the people of Israel seem right now.
Great question. It's a great question.